Okay.
Hi, this is Tamara. Thank you, Scott, so much for inviting me. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Tamara, sorry. I just swamped you. I'm sorry. Want you. Can you start over?
Yeah.
We're good. I just hit the wrong mute button. I muted the whole line instead of my phone.
Oh, okay. I thought it was me.
No, it was me. All right. Thanks. All right. We're good to go. We're all good now.
Well, I'm in my favorite place in the world. I love to be in the rooms with the steps, and I'm just so honored and grateful that you invited me to speak tonight. I would just say that for me, my sobriety is such a gift, and I wouldn't have that without service. And I didn't used to think that way. I quit drinking 4.5 years ago. I'm coming up on my 5-year birthday in December, and I never thought I could do what you guys do. I never thought that I could live without alcohol in my life, and I thought that AA had a lot of good messages, but I didn't think I could do the service because, you know, I was too busy. I was, you know, on the volunteer board of my children's school, or I was organizing a charity event, and you know, I just was never thought I could do what you guys do, which I didn't really know what you did, which was serve other human beings. And there's something really unique in that service, and I realize now, after being sober for 4.5 years from alcohol and now 1.5 years of all my bottom lines and sex and love addiction, that when I was serving the school, you know, somebody could always show up and be in that meeting, and somebody could always take my lead at a meeting for my spiritual community. But you know what? When I took the job of making the coffee or bringing the cream and sugar for a meeting, and you don't show up, there's people who aren't going to get their coffee that night, and that's never good for alcoholics, not to have their coffee and not to have their cream and sugar. And I really got what service was. It was a humbling experience to be able to serve just so other people could have their coffee, and that meant that other people could stay sober one more day. So for me, service is the key to my sobriety. Like I said, I never thought I could live on life's terms. I never thought I could live without alcohol. I certainly never thought I could live without a man as my central being and all God provider in my life. I never thought I could live without a man being my higher power. And I didn't even know. I didn't even know I had made alcohol and God my higher power. So for me, you know, I was willing to surrender. Thank God. I don't know why it took me so long. But I guess I didn't have enough low enough bottom. I didn't have anyone come and 12-step me. I was a secret drinker, and I was a secret sex addict. So nobody knew about my double life, and so that's why I guess I didn't have enough consequences to get me in here sooner. But thank God that it was a miracle, and God put on my heart to try to put down the drink, and once I put down the drink, I was able to put down the man. So, you know, for me, what happened was I was so willing to do whatever you told me to do because I was so sick and tired of lying and cheating and stealing that I was ready to do something different. And you guys told me to get a sponsor. You guys told me to take commitment. I rarely say no to a tradition, to a 12-step ask. You know, if I have to, I have to. But I rarely do say no. And that's because service works. Service works to keep me sober. So for me, I wanted to take on sponsees really early. I thought it was really important. I knew I was coming to meetings, and I knew I was reading my book, and I knew I was checking in with my sponsor, and I knew I was doing my steps, but I knew I needed to do that fifth part, you know, that 12th step, which is pass it along to others what we freely receive. And I tried, you know, I got a couple girls in the rooms. One girl, I think she wasn't really committed to the idea that she was an alcoholic. She was just trying to get her son back. So I was only her sponsor for a couple months until she got her son back. And I had another woman who her schedule changed, and she wanted to be in daytime meetings. And at that time, I was in nighttime meetings because of my job. But it started to click, you know. I started putting myself out there on the H&I panels, going to hospitals and institutions, and that did the trick. I was able to keep sharing my story for people who were in rehab, and that helped me do the service that I needed to keep me sober. And then finally, God brought me my first sober person who really wanted to work the steps, and I got the honor of starting to sponsor that person. Now, for me, sponsorship has been a really eye-opening and beautiful thing because, you know, at first I came into it thinking that I needed to help somebody else, right? I needed to help somebody get through the steps. And I was really, really attached, as a good codependent is, to making sure that that person did one, and then they did two, and then, oh, they didn't get a God. Okay, then they can do three, and are they going to get a God? And I was so worried about helping them, you know, find what I had found, because this way of sobriety had changed my life. I went from confused, crying all the time, not knowing what end was up, to clarity, to peace, to serenity. And I so badly wanted my sponsors to have this. And what I learned was that I had to get out of the way. I had to get out of the way and let the steps and traditions that have been with us for over 50 years, I had to let those steps and traditions and that beautiful book that changed my life. I read that book in 3 days when I decided to put down the drink. And that book was my story that I was looking for. You know, my whole life I was looking for a book like this. It was my family's story, and it was our country's story, and I had to get out of the way of myself and let the steps and traditions and higher power do the work. And once I did that, this amazing thing happened where I had all the time in the world to sponsor other people. I had all the time in the world to serve and speak and be on H&I and lead meetings. And so once I got myself out of the way, then higher power was able to come in and work my whole schedule out. I sponsor tons of women in both these programs, and it's not about me. This is what I do to keep my sobriety. That's it. I don't know if I'm a good sponsor. I don't know if I'm a bad sponsor. The other thing I've really learned is that these sponsor relationships have really helped me in my personal relationships. So I'm able to, you know, learn things with my sponsor or with my sponsee that helps me in my personal relationships. And what I mean by that is I'm able to listen without an agenda. I'm able to share and be heard, which is one of the really amazing things you get with this program, is you get to help share this message. And if the people are really hungry for it and they really want to stay sober, they will listen. And you get to practice being listened to, and you get to practice listening, which is really what we all want in our healthy relationships. You know, the other thing is you get to practice boundaries. You get to set your own time schedule. You get to figure out, is it comfortable for you to be on the phone with someone for more than 15 minutes? Do you like being on the phone with someone for an hour? Would you prefer a 5-minute check-in every day? What would she prefer? What would she like? And you get to work these things out. If you read the sponsorship pamphlet from AA and you look at the material in this law book, you will see that there's not a lot of direction of how any of this goes. This is an oral tradition that's been passed down. So people think, oh, it should be done this way and your sponsor should call you every day, or it should be done that way and this one shouldn't contact that one. No, but this is like a dynamic. that you get to work out with one person at a time, one human being at a time. You know, one soul who's just trying to get a little bit more sober and have that daily reprieve. So you get a couple things out of this. First of all, you get to learn how to set boundaries in not such a deep, intense situation like you might in a intimate relationship. And you get to see how that goes. You get to check in, how does that feel for you? You get to check in, how does that feel for them? And they can tell you, and I've had sponsors tell me, that's not working for me. Well, that's not a deal breaker for me. I can listen today and say, oh, that doesn't work for you. What would work better? And a lot of times my sponsees have more courage. They have more strength. They have more smart. They have more wisdom. They have more spirituality than I even do. A lot of times we'll be in a session where we're working together, and I'm getting just as much out of that session as they're getting, and it just goes both ways, you know, back and forth like that. I don't believe you have to have the steps done to start sponsoring. That's not how we do it in AA or from where I come from in AA in California. We start sponsoring as soon as you can. As soon as you have anybody that has a little less recovery than you, they want what you have, you can start sponsoring. You know, to wake up in the morning and have a gratitude chain with 9 other women on it, to wake up in the morning and it's not all about me. I don't wake up in the morning and say, what's happening to me? What's going on with me? What am I feeling? I don't do that anymore. I wake up in the morning, see where I'm needed, see where I'm serving. Am I going to a meeting? Am I leading? Am I taking a commitment? Grab those commitments. That will keep you sober. That will give you power. It'll give you the power of God. And when you take on people, you don't have to worry about if you're ready, because your higher power just has to be in the room with you. And if not, then just believe in the rooms of, just believe in all the miracles you've seen, you know, all the miracles of millions of people getting sober in these two programs or any other program that you're in over and over and over again. If you don't have a higher power, you can just believe in the magic of this book, the magic of the room, seeing, you'll start to see people looking better, feeling healthy, feeling better, staying off their bottom lines, having some clarity, having some peace. And once you start to see that, you just can believe in that. As long as that belief and that willingness is in the room with you and your sponsee, you'll be able to just listen to them do their steps, give them whatever guidance you have. You cannot fail. You cannot fail. I would tell you, take commitments as soon as you can, start sponsoring as soon as you can, and you know, this way of life has been really transformative for me. I serve God in the morning, every morning, all day, and my God takes care of the rest of my day. I don't have to worry. I don't have to sweat it. If something's too difficult, I just put it to my higher power and pray for it. It's a very, very different way of living than I live the rest of my life. So, that's pretty much all I have to say, but I'm open for questions, and I'm going to be able to stay around for another half hour tonight, and I just love you, Scott, for letting me do this and for being a part of my sobriety. It's really, really such a blessing.
Hey, how about now? I bet y'all can hear me now. Thank you, everybody. I've had my phone muted, so you didn't hear all the wonderful things that we've been saying.
Well, I can hear you fine.
Yeah, everybody in the room here could hear me, but y'all couldn't hear me. So we have a new guy that joined us real quick. I'll let him say hello again.
Hello, my name's Andrew.
All right. And then we have a question. Golly, what a goofball. We have a question from Sergio.
Hey, Tamara. So my question is, do you have a set time frame as far as how quick you work the steps with the sponsee, or do you base it based on the sponsee as far as how fast you go?
Thank you so much. I try to get them doing their steps as quick as possible. If I'm going to take somebody on as a sponsor, I at least want to know that they have a willingness to stop acting out. And I try to get them into the steps. I use the step workbook that's on the SLAASWS website. It's a really great little book. It only costs $12. And I use that book, and I start to have them look at that step one as soon as they're ready.
You got another question? I got a follow-up, which this is always the one that's most interesting to me, which is establishing that willingness.
Absolutely.
That's always this crazy line where, you know, there's guys that are willing, but they're kind of halfway willing and not. How do you establish that?
You know, I think that comes with a little bit of practice. But for me, I'll tell you one way that I figured out when people weren't willing and what I wasn't willing to do was I would take a newcomer's phone number. And I would call them or they would call me, and we'd have a conversation. And usually that newcomer call is sort of like a therapy session. You know, they're just sharing kind of like, especially if they've never been to program and this is like their first time ever on a call or very new to the program, they're just going to tell you really how bad things are going. And you're just going to sit and listen, or I sit and listen. And, you know, I may spend 15 minutes, I may spend 20 minutes. It really depends on how God's organized my day. But at the end of the call, you know, I, you know, say, call me, text me, you know, anytime, just call me. And if I get a call back and then the second call goes exactly like the first call, then I say, are you an addict? Do you find yourself relating to this program? And if they've already been to 6 meetings and they're still not sure, then I'll say, okay, well, you know what? I love getting to know you, and I think, you know, you're just an awesome person. You know, usually I feel that. And but I really, I only work the steps. I only spend time with people on the phone working the program because I'm not a therapist. I'm not a life coach. And what happens to me if I get into a lot of these conversations that aren't directed around the steps, my codependency kicks in, and that's when I become a rescuer. And I can do that, you know, I can try to do that with all the people I'm codependent with, my daughter, my mother, my father. You know, I don't need to be doing that in this program. So that's one of the ways that I don't get involved with people that aren't willing. And I'll just tell them, you know, get the names of other women. Look for, you know, when you're ready, you know, look for a sponsor. And if you want to talk to me about sponsorship, that's great. And so for me, you know, I feel like if they want to work with a sponsor, then they're pretty darn willing. And if they like me and they like what I have and they want to work with me, I don't have a lot of to-dos after that. I don't insist that my sponsors call me a certain amount of times. I don't insist that they work their steps in a certain speed. I don't really insist on anything because everything works different for different people. Some people need to be working their steps, and then they decide at their third step after being in withdrawal only 3 months, they need to go out and try some controlled dating. I mean, that's just what happens. It happens all the time. People have to go try some controlled drinking. They're just not surrendered yet. But once, I think, if, Scott, are you saying, like, you've already started working with someone and they're not willing?
You know, well, I've got some that I'm working with that really everybody I'm working with is willing, but I'm still, you know, there's a few guys that I'm talking to that I can't get a real clear sense about their willingness, and so it's always just a challenge because, you know, like right now I've got 5-6 guys I'm working with. 7 guys I'm working with. And I don't have time to play Mickey Mouse games with them.
So what does it look like when they're not willing?
I think it is that I have a pretty when I hang up or when we're finishing up a call, we've set up the next call, and they're not showing up for that next call. And life happens, so that's not a big deal if you don't make one, but when they start getting to be, you know, hey, there's going to be a rerun of I Love Lucy on tonight that looks pretty interesting to me, or you know, or just not showing up, or just, you know, keeping trying to change. And I just don't have a lot of flexibility in threading a bunch of guys in. By the time I talk to guys 2 or 3 times a week, you know, I try to talk between 30 minutes and an hour. There's just not a lot of hours left by the time I work and make a few meetings.
I went through this exact situation many times. So if somebody doesn't call you or show up for a meeting or they push it off, like they don't show up at all or they call you and tell you they have to cancel, what happens next? Do you initiate the next session or do they?
No, they have to initiate the next session.
And then they'll initiate the next session, and then they won't show up a second time?
Say that again?
They'll initiate the next session, but they won't show up a second time?
Yeah, I've had that happen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've had them text me, and then, you know, they just... You know, or they won't quite tighten down. They'll say, yeah, we're going to get together on Friday, but I don't know what time. And I'll say, well, just text me when we get a little closer, and we'll figure out the time. And then I don't hear anything from them.
Mm-hmm. And well, pretty much for me, if that happened 2 times or a 3rd time maybe, I might just say, you know, it doesn't seem like you're ready to work the steps, but please call me back when you are.
Yeah.
But because it's really about your boundary. And, you know, I've had this beaten over my head by so many old timers, but, like, we cannot get people sober. We are here to offer the message, and we're here to carry the message, but we're not here to carry the man. And you can still be in their life. You can still have them call you if they want to check in from time to time, and you can choose to pick up the phone or not. But if somebody's not keeping their word after 2 or 3 times to meet with you and work on the steps, they're probably not ready.
Yeah. I'm not opposed to reaching back to my sponsor or sponsees at all. In fact, I think that's That doesn't, you know, there's some guys out here that say, I never call my sponsees. They always all have to call me. I don't think that's right either. I think there's times that when I know what's going on and I know that that guy may need a, he may need a little bit of just, you know, just friendship, just kind of taking my sponsor hat off and just being a friend, you know, being a brother to him. I think that's real important. But again,
and it's beautiful. It's beautiful, and it also shows how unique everyone's relationship is, you know, that some people believe that they'll call their sponsors. Some people just don't. They have their sponsees call them. But it's not a rule, you know what I mean? So that really kind of, like, illuminates that idea that this is all unique. It's unique for each relationship and each human being, which is exactly how we want to be in our healthy relationships, you know?
Well, that's interesting. That's really interesting. Yeah.
Bill from Boston, I got a question.
Hi, Bill.
Bill from Boston. Wouldn't it be easier just to just have them in the after your first initial talk with them, as you stated, getting to know each other, so to speak, I guess. And once they are able to connect the dots and say, oh, my God, yeah, I am an addict, give them a homework assignment and say, all right, I want you to read Bill's story and the doctor's opinion and call me back tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Wouldn't that just be easier? Then you'll know whether a person is going to be serious or not, whether they're going to be doing whatever they have to do to become clean and sober.
It's a great idea. I love it. And I've seen people do it, and I've done it, and it works great. You know, yeah. I had this one person that I knew who he would give the person his number, and he would say, you know, buy a big book and call me. And then the person wouldn't call, and I would just be like, oh, he's not very serious about this. He should be calling that guy. That guy needed him. And you know what? That was just his thing. He had been around for 17 years, and he said, if you baby him, you bury him, which isn't my philosophy, but that was his, and that's what worked for him, you know. So you'll kind of develop your own kind of I have women who work consistently. They have a step done every month or sooner. They're ready to go. I've had women who did 1, 2, and 3 pretty quickly, but just never started 4. And whenever I get confused about this stuff, I call my sponsor, like, she's not starting 4. She's not starting 4. And she's like, that's okay. Like, I didn't make you start 4 at a certain time. It took me 1 year to do my steps in AA, you know. I did my slow steps a lot faster, but, you know, that's what my sponsor tells me is, you know what, she'll do 4 when she's ready. But it's always up to you. You know, you don't have to be, if you feel like that's too much linger time for you and you need a consistent, I mean, I know a girl in SLAW, I mean, I heard a girl in SLAW who gets all the steps done in 3 months. That's the only way she works. And I don't know if they don't work fast enough if she drops them. I don't. But I guess, you know, it's just a great idea. And that's where we get to be creative. Like, that's where we get to have spirit come into us and be creative, is because there is no one way to do this, you know? Mm-hmm. And if Scott wants to call and be a friend, he can call and be a friend.
Yeah. Well, like Scott was saying, it all depends on the situation, too. I mean, if you got somebody who's dead serious about getting clean and sober, but they have turmoil within the family, whatever that may be, whether there could be a person sick in the family or, God forbid, have cancer or having trouble, marital troubles, like Scott was saying, then, yeah, you're going to want to reach out to that person and you want to be that big brother and be there to be the support and their cheerleader. But, I mean, at the same token, like what you're saying, you're not there to be the wet nurse either. You're not there to, you know, drag them around and say, come on, you got to do this. Come on, you got to do this. It's either, you know, you're going to do it or you're not. How bad do you want this sobriety? As it was once put in our conference that we just had down in Dallas, Billy, you know, cat turds covered in chocolate if they want it bad enough.
And you know what happens to me, Bill, is that, is it Bill or Phil?
It's Joe, J-O-E.
Oh, Joe, what happens to me when I do a lot of that following up and see where people mm-hmm. are, and I worry about my girls. I mean, I had a girl who's mm-hmm. been sober 2 years. She was in jail. She had her sobriety was 100% her own. It was dry mm-hmm. sobriety. She had no program. Mm-hmm. She was about to be reunited with her kids. She'd been on the streets for over a year, and she just mm-hmm. decided that she just wasn't identifying with the steps.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew for my own codependency, for my own mental health, for my own sobriety, that I could be her friend and I could take her to meetings, but that I could not continue to act and worry and try to sponsor somebody who had no desire to do the steps. And
right.
I think that for your, you know, for our own sobriety, you kind of have to figure out where that line is. You know,
right.
if you're willing, you know, if you're just willing to wait, sometimes some I won't hear from someone for a really long time. And, you know, I went to Peru for 10 days, and I had, I think, 10 sponsees at the time. And I told each of them that I'd
wow.
be there and I'd love to talk to them, but they should get WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger. And then when I was there, I'd be there. And seven of the girls did that. And you know what? All seven of them stayed sober.
Wow.
Every single one that took my WhatsApp. And I don't even remember if they all called me. But those three girls who said, no, I'll just wait till you get back. Well, that's fine. But then you don't have that lifeline.
Yeah.
And three of those girls relapsed. Not while I was gone. But it was really interesting, right?
Yeah. I seem to lose all my sponsees at the fourth step when they find out they actually have to do work.
right.
That's where
right,
most of them
right.
drop off. There's probably three or four of them actually stayed with it and went through with it, and I had them complete all 12 steps in 4.5 weeks. And then most of them, the fourth step, they're like, you want me to do what? Exit stage left. And that's how you know the people are not serious.
Hey, did you get to hear Jane when she spoke?
No.
Oh, well, one of the things she says, which is really interesting, is just write down three things that are true right now. And you can do it with the columns, but you don't have to write down about your mother, you don't have to write down about your father, you don't have to write down about your ex-husband, but write down three things that are true right now. And I'm working with a sponsee tonight, and she's been putting off her fourth step, and she's been in and out of these programs for her whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just going to start by writing down three people, one person that she's got three resentments for, or three resentments that she has at three different people, or one person that she's angry, that she's got three things that make her angry. And we're
mm-hmm.
just going to start by writing three things.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times that'll just get them going, and they start to have that relief, and they
right.
start to get that power, and they start to feel better. I had this one sponsee. She just kept trying to tell me why she didn't need to read me her fourth step. And I said, you know, it's not like I didn't create this stuff. But she said she wanted to read it to her therapist. I said, great. And then she didn't read it to her therapist. She didn't read it to her therapist. So I said, you know, she kept asking me for help me, you know, make me feel less tortured and help me. And I just said, well,
mm-hmm.
I'm telling you how I can help you. You just need to start moving your mouth and reading that. And the minute
right.
she had written a beautiful fourth step, and once she started reading it, she was on her way, you know. Now she can't wait to talk to me and read me another part of it.
That's awesome. Yeah, usually I take them to page 65 and I go through that, and then I let them go. I give them 3 days.
Great. I love that. I'm writing that down. That's what Jane said in her share, too. I think Scott has that
yeah.
recorded if you want to listen to it. But, yeah, she worked on us with page 65 a lot.
Yeah, I think Scott sent it to me, but when he did, I wasn't hooked to Wi-Fi, so I couldn't download it. So.
Yeah, I think you'll like it a lot.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
Okay. Any other questions? looking at the time, and I think you're fixing to have to bounce, right, Tamara?
Yeah, I still have about 6 or 7 minutes.
Okay.